Hello, America. Yesterday, the Fed raised the interest rates, and they said they're going to do it, I think, 6 or 7 times more this year. This could get dicey in many ways for everyone. And I want you to understand what happened yesterday, and not in terms of, well, you know, us traders believe. I don't care. I don't watch CNBC because I only understand about half of it. I want to know what this means to the average person. Carol Roth joins us, the author of The War on Small Business. She gets it and can explain what it all means in 60 seconds. Carol, welcome to the Glenn Beck program.
Hey, Glenn, lots of things to talk about.
Yeah, boy, I've got a long list for you, too. So let's start with what happened yesterday and why people should care.
So I want to take a step back and talk about, you know, why the Fed did what it did in terms of raising interest rates, what we call 25 basis points or 0.25%. 100 basis points is 1%.
Okay.
And basically, they were undoing or at least attempting to start to undo the effects of what they in part caused. Their monetary policy, zero interest rate policy, printing trillions of dollars, the government spending trillions of dollars in terms of fiscal stimulus, turning parts of the economy off and wrecking the labor market and the supply chain. All of those things are the reasons we have inflation today, exacerbated by decisions that the Biden administration made around oil and gas dependence and whatnot.
Correct.
So basically, we had inflation, which we've all been talking about and seeing as we go to the grocery store and certainly at the fuel pump and whatnot. And so finally, they said, we have to do something. Now, I'm going to tell you, this is a little bit of window dressing because they were doing accommodation. They were in the market purchasing securities last week. So last week, they were being accommodative. But this week, we have to maintain our credibility and we need to do something. So they decided to raise what is called the Fed funds rate. It's a rate where banks lend to each other overnight in terms of their reserves, and that reverberates through the market. So they had brought that down to a target of 0.25%, and they had held it there for the last couple of years. And they said, okay, well, you know, inflation's getting away. We better raise some interest rates, one of our tools in order to do that. And they took the huge step of a whole 0.25% increase to do it. Yeah, very, very, very meaningful because they need to be credible.
Right. The last time we had this problem of this size, it took an interest rate of about 19% or 20%, if I'm not mistaken. Raising it 0.25% is really a joke. Where do you think these interest rates should be? Not considering killing the economy, where it should be. Should it, if we were in a healthy country still, would it be 20% or more?
So there are a couple things to unpack there. First of all, this is an unprecedented situation. We don't have a benchmark because we've never had central banks, not just in the US, but around the world, printing trillions upon trillions of dollars. This has just never happened before. We've never had governments turn off the economy. You never have a situation where there's 1.7 jobs available for every job seeker because of what the government did. So we're flying a little bit blind. I've always been a fan of normalized interest rates. I think it's a horrible idea to have the Fed meddling and trying to,
sure,
to direct things. I want the market to set it. And so before all of this nonsense started, before the financial crisis, the Great Recession financial crisis in 07, 08, which was really the first time we went totally off the rails, mm-hmm, with the zero interest rate policy and the purchase of securities, the interest rates were around, you know, 5%+. And, you know, that seems to be, you know, a healthy place where things should be. We should not be in a place where we're saying, you know, when you take risk, you shouldn't be getting rewarded for it. You know, 0% interest. It makes no sense. So in reality, you know, we're still at very historically low interest rates, and in a healthy economy, you know, to have 3%, 4%, 5% would be completely acceptable. We just have been so addicted to this easy money and this free money for so long. I'm not sure how we get out of it.
Okay, so there's a couple of problems with 5% interest rates right now. One would be that people would not be able to afford a new house, et cetera, because of inflation and everything else. But the other that nobody ever talks about is we now have a national debt over $30 trillion, and that is just like buying a house. You have an interest rate on that. If we had an interest rate of 5%, how much more money do we have to pay?
Bingo. This is the dilemma that the Fed has gotten themselves into. By keeping down interest rates, they've basically given the government a free pass to just spend and spend and to rack up more and more debt. And we're at a point where the debt is completely out of control and, you know, has exceeded our level of GDP. So if you think about $30 trillion of debts, and obviously the Fed funds rate and the interest rate on the debt isn't a one-to-one correlation, but we know that as one moves up, the other moves up. So in terms of the interest on our national debt, I want everyone to pay very close attention because this is staggering. For every 1% increase, that is another $300 billion that we have to pay in interest on the national debt. That is our tax dollars that are going to pay more for things that we have already purchased. It is not new purchases. It's literally a finance charge, almost like credit card interest rate on stuff we have already bought. And this is the dilemma the Fed has, because they know as they raise interest rates, this is going to get out of control. The CBO had made a projection that saying that this is going to get out of control. But in their projection, they said, well, you know, we think the yield on the 10-year Treasury note gets to about 2.1% in 2025. So, you know, we're going to have to really be concerned maybe in 2029. The yield on the 10-year Treasury note is at that 2.1% today. So I don't multiple know. Years
I,
ahead of time.
Please talk down to me like I'm in kindergarten. I don't understand the yield thing with the Treasury, how that works, how that's affected. So can you explain that?
Yeah. So basically, it's, you know, how much the government has to pay on the debt. So it's what the market demands. And obviously, you know, if there is a lot of demand for Treasury securities,
right,
the prices of that go up, then the yield or the interest that you demand is lower because there's a lot of demand. You don't have to pay a lot for your debt.
But we had been at very, very, very low. Even
very
because
low.
The Fed was buying up, there was no demand for our right. Treasuries, which is our loan.
So let me put it in context. What we are paying currently on our national debt in terms of a combined interest rate is somewhere in the neighborhood. I've seen projections of, you know, 1.4% to 1.6%. So they've been able to finance that at a very low rate, but that number is starting to creep up. And with the Fed increasing interest rates, it will further creep up. And every 1% is $300 billion.
So if we have an interest rate of 5 or 6 percent, we're talking like between $2 and $3 trillion more.
Yeah,
the entire budget.
Exactly. It's just completely untenable at that point in time.
Okay.
So okay. I would imagine other things happen in the interim. But, you know, this is why when we talk about things like MMT, modern monetary theory, or what I call it, magic money tree, that says, you can just print into infinity because we can just print more. Well, we are now living through that real time experiment. As we've all said, no, you can't. It causes inflation. It has real costs for the average American, and it decreases the value of every dollar that you hold.
All right. So the best thing you can do is get out of credit cards. You should cut those up if you can, and pay them off if you can. Get a refi right now, because you're probably paying about 16% for your credit cards, correct?
It could be going up, and anything that has that adjustable interest rate associated with, some people may have something called an ARM, an adjustable rate mortgage, where it's, you know, it adjusts over time. Maybe it's fixed for a certain number of years, but then it starts to float. Anything that is adjustable rate debt is going to increase in price. And if you need financing, let's say you have a business and you haven't taken advantage of low rates yet, you're going to want to lock that in on a fixed basis now, because it's not going to get cheaper anytime soon.
Now, the other problem, the problem with raising interest rates is, let's say you have a business and you need a loan. If the interest rates start to go up, that kills that business. They can't afford that loan, just like we can't afford our national debt. Or you want to buy a house. Yesterday, mortgages, the new mortgages fell immediately, or just on the whisper that it was coming. We are seeing a slowdown in mortgages, which means that people are going to buy fewer houses. The scary thing about this is you don't know where that switch is. You just kind of have to guess, and it might shut everything down.
That's the needle that the Fed is trying to thread, in addition to dealing with the consequences of the national debt. What happens is, as they raise interest rates, you know, their intention is to slow down the economy. I mean, that's basically right. What it is. They want to slow down consumer demand. But the question is, you know, how do you do that without creating a recession, or without creating reverberations for the economics of the average American?
Can I be really, really cynical? I mean, let me go beyond cynical. Let me go into, I'm a thriller writer. Okay. And I'm writing a thriller. And for some reason, this country needs to slow down the economy, but they can't slow down the economy because then businesses will fail. But they don't really care about the average person. You know what I mean? That's going to fail. That's fine. We'll print more money. We'll put them on welfare, or tell them to stay home, or whatever. Wouldn't one way to slow the economy for the consumer, but not slow the economy for the big corporations, would a war do that?
I think that would completely change the tenor of the economy. But I think that raising the interest rates does that, because kind of like we saw over the last couple of years, if you are a big corporation, you've taken advantage of that debt. You have that war chest. You have that strong balance sheet. So in terms of the transfer of wealth, that is one way to do that. But the war, you know, that would completely change the tenor of, you know, who benefits. And certainly it would be the bigger guys versus the smaller guys, but it right. would probably be folks in, you know, defense rather than yeah. the financial services industry, for example.
Okay. Carol, hang on. I've got some more questions and like you to explain a couple of other things coming up in just a second. Give me
reserve currency.
Explain what that means, because,
okay,
so I mean, to the average person, forget about, you know, the central banks and everything else. What does it mean yeah. to the average person to have half the world get off our dollar, ship yeah, them so back?
So this is why I love you, Glenn, is because we take the most complicated concepts in the world and yeah. try to explain them right. as if, you know, it's Elmo and Big Bird here. Right. The idea of being the reserve currency is something that's has sort of long history, and it means particularly in the case of goods and services, but also in the case of oil, that everyone in the world pretty much agreed to use dollars for settlement. And that puts some responsibility on the United States. There's something that is called the Triffin Dilemma. And it's an economist back in the 1960s who basically said, there's a conflict. If you are going to be the world reserve currency, you're going to have to make tough choices. And you're not always going to be able to do what's right at home in order to make sure you're doing what's right
for
in
everyone.
The national sphere. Yeah.
Right.
And unfortunately, this has been an issue that's been going on for a long time. But in recent times, as we've been talking about with the Fed and the decisions that they've made, they actually haven't done right by either party. They've been screwing over the average American with their policy and transferring wealth, but they've been doing the same thing in the national sphere. And frankly, a lot of countries are getting sick of it. And so there have been predictions for quite some time that there was going to be an event. An advisor actually to the OECD said that it's probably not an economic event, it's a geopolitical event that's going to expose this system, you know, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. And so a lot of folks feel like the sanctions that were made against Russia were potentially a cover story, that we know we are potentially going to lose right. this reserve currency status. So we're going to say, well, we did it because we had to take a stand. But the reality is, you know, as we've now shown the world, you can put your money in our central bank and you can buy treasuries and U.S. dollars and hold them, but you might not be able to access them, which is not a really good thing if you're going to be the world Correct. Reserve currency.
Correct.
So there are a couple of potential outcomes, and I know that you've been, you know, talking about this, Glenn. But you know, one thing that folks have been talking about is, you know, does China potentially step into the reserve currency position? There is an issue around that because usually, if you have the reserve currency, you run a trade deficit, and we know that China is a nation of exporters. So, are they really going to step into that? I'm not sure. The other thought is, listen, we've seen so many banks, central banks around the world print so much money. There's all of this debt. You can't really just say we're going to cancel it all because there's counterparties. There are people on the other side of the debt. So what could you do to offset that? Well, if
Hold on. Okay, Elmo and Big Bird have to stop because there's...
Okay.
Elmo says there's only 20 more seconds left.
Okay.
So we will come back because I really want to hear this this other new plan. And canceling debt just opens up Pandora's box, at least in my head. We'll talk about that coming up with more Carol Roth in just a second. We're with Carol Roth. She is the author of the book, The War on Small Business. She's a former investment banker. Don't hold that against her. She calls herself a recovering investment banker. She worked on Wall Street for years and years and then kind of went, ooh, I might be on the wrong side here, and is trying to do everything she can to strengthen individual businesses, small businesses all across the country. And I love her for it. Carol, you were just saying that one of the options in this nightmare scenario, which I think is unfolding in front of us, where the world reserve currency is not going to be the dollar. I don't know what it is, but they're going to change the dollar from what it is to a digital dollar. And I don't know how it all shakes out, but probably not very well. But you brought up there's all this debt that we just can't cancel because there are people on the other side of that debt.
Yeah.
So, okay, so explain what you think. That can't happen, you say.
Well, I mean, nothing is a never scenario,
yeah,
right?
We're
in an unprecedented situation.
Yeah.
And you know, for people who are students of history, despite all of the wreckage that could come from this, it's a very interesting point in time, that especially financially, you know, you had the U.S. dollar as the world reserve currency. You had then us going off the gold standard. Then you had us, you know, with the petrodollar basically saying we will manage the dollar as good as gold for oil. Mm-hmm. And then you had the Fed basically go completely rogue and not do that. And anybody who is holding reserves that they're supposed to say, well, the U.S. dollar is safe and it's a good store of value and we keep devaluing it, you know, that's not a good thing and good outcome
right.
from that. So, and these are, by the way, these are not my theories. I'm just communicating is out there from
right.
people who are far smarter than I am.
Right.
But one of the theories is that if you can't cancel the debt, then you can make everybody whole by writing up another asset. So is there a neutral asset that central banks have access to that's on their balance sheet that maybe they have been buying at really good prices that all of a sudden everybody comes together and says, well, we're just going to write up the value of that instead
Land.
Of writing down the debt? Gold.
Gold.
So central banks have been buying tons of physical gold. By the way, billionaires have been buying a lot of physical gold as well.
Yeah.
And I use the determination physical because it's different than the market
ETFs.
That's traded ETFs.
Yeah. Those are ridiculous.
Because that's done in dollars,
yeah.
right? So if
yeah.
the dollar, you know, that who's backing that? but physical gold. So there is a theory going around that potentially that on a standalone basis or a basket of neutral metals, which by the way was just, you know, thrown out as an idea early on when it was pushed aside for the US dollar, that maybe there is this, you know, come meeting of the minds. And, you know, this is the way that you make all of these other central banks and countries whole, as you just write up the value of that gold. So if you think that that's going to happen and you think that the financial system is going to collapse, you know, then you want to be owning physical metals
because
have a store of that.
Because when you say they're going to write off debt, you don't mean people's houses.
Government debt. Cannot write off government debt because, you know, when you take, that's a loan, right?
Yeah.
It's you owe the money back to somebody. So the other side of potentially doing some sort of, oh, we're going to have mass forgiveness, is that we take something else that everybody has and we just say that it's more valuable. Poof, overnight, magic.
That doesn't sound like
it was a bad magic trick.
Yeah, it sounds like bad magic. We're dealing with a lot of black magic. Stu and I were talking about this story that came out of Britain. We haven't heard anyone talk about this. Explain what happened.
Okay, yeah. So just a little background. It's in the London Metal Exchange, and it's the price of nickel. Now, I know no one cares about the price of nickel, but just to give you the basis here.
Tesla does.
Yeah, that's true. If you're buying an electric car, you certainly do. So from 10,000, it's basically the last 5 years, it's bounced back and forth between 10,000 and 20,000 per metric ton. Okay. It got up to a little bit above 20,000 here in the last few weeks. And then obviously all the stuff going on in Russia, Ukraine, big places, you know, sources of where all of the nickel comes from for these electric car batteries. It goes from basically 20,000 to 80,000 in basically a day. Okay, so four times up in one day. So let me read this. This is from the Wall Street Journal.
Listen to this. Have you read this, Carol?
Oh, I know this. I know this story.
Okay,
yeah,
this is crazy.
I do know this story, so we can talk about it.
Yeah, listen to this, America. This is craziness.
Yeah. So traders on the London Metal Exchange smelled blood and nickel prices almost doubled in a short period of time. A Chinese company faced a $1 billion margin call that exchange officials feared it couldn't meet. Rather than let it fail, which would probably have taken down several of the smaller brokers that serviced them, the London Metals Exchange decided to cancel all of the day's trading, more than 9,000 trades worth about $4 billion. It canceled the trades, not because of a fat finger error, which exchanges often cancel, not because of a rogue algorithm, as regulators claimed in the 2010 flash crash in U.S. stocks, but because someone with too much leverage was going to blow up with effects on some members of the exchange. This is moral hazard taken to extreme. It has always been true that if you face a $100 margin call, it's your problem, while if you have a $1 billion margin call, it's the broker's problem, and the authorities might save them. What is almost unprecedented here is that the exchange authorities decided to save them with money taken from other traders who otherwise would be sitting on fat profits. I mean, this is, you won. You picked it the right direction. You've got these huge profits, and they cancel your trade to save someone else.
Incredible. And it's China.
And it's China.
I mean, there is no such thing as a free market with this.
No, I mean, this is another too big to fail scenario. It happened to be, I believe it was an individual billionaire who had made a short bet against nickel. So he went in the other direction, and that's why
I mean, then you don't put the money down on the table if you don't know what the odds are and you're not willing to lose your money. That's like going to Vegas and placing a huge bet, and when you lose it, you're like, hey, you know, Caesar's, I mean, this is crazy. And Caesar says, oh, we're not gonna count that bet. That doesn't happen.
It's horrendous, and it goes back to the integrity of the markets and some of the issues that so many of the retail investors have been rallying against. And it's just another example, and there are big name banks involved. The exchange was actually shut down for multiple days, I believe, before it started trading again. And the people who, you know, made a bet and decided to participate in the market ended up getting screwed out of their profits, but they're never going to get the leniency if it happens to them on the other side. And, you know, just the overall integrity, like you said, this is not a free market. It is not a fair market. And, you know, we have too many of these big guys who are being saved at the expense, sometimes literally, sometimes figuratively, of the small guys over and over again.
And that's what I think people are so sick of. And when they see this next crash, especially with Janet Yellen saying it will be equitable when we reassemble, it will be equitable. What the hell does that even mean? Probably stuff like this. And when they see the rich getting richer, and I don't mean the person who runs a business and may have $1 million. I mean the rich, the elite of the elite, the BlackRocks of the world, the banks of the world. I just, when their debt is being bailed out and real Americans are paying huge money for their food and their gas, and then their home is taken, there's trouble. That's real trouble.
Yeah, and unfortunately, that is the scenario. I mean, there's one thing to become wealthy because you earned it in a fair playing field. That's something that we want to celebrate. But we do not want to celebrate when the playing field is tilted, when somebody's got their thumb on the scale, when we have this transfer of wealth from Main Street to Wall Street, which has been going on for, you know, in a very large part for a decade and a half, but has been accelerated over the last year and a half. And, you know, if we talk about all of this coming to fruition and us losing reserve currency status, you know, it's going to mean a slower economy for us because we are not in a position, we don't have the strong manufacturing base or competitive pricing to be able to export. So all these people are like, oh, it's great, we'll reshore the jobs. I don't think they're thinking in context of our existing economic structure. It's going to be, unfortunately, very painful. But just to have a moment of hope here, Glenn, because this is really doom and gloom, is you have to remember in any time of pain, there is always opportunities. And so it is, you know, incumbent upon you to find where those opportunities are. You know,
so
what are
average,
the things?
Average person is saying, what is that opportunity?
Yeah, it's finding the things that have inelastic demand, meaning that people will pay prices even when they're continuing to increase, and making investments in those kinds of things, or retooling your business to be servicing those markets. It's those kinds of shifts where you have to look for those hidden opportunities in what could be a completely new economic scenario for us going forward.
I think what you just said translates to what I just told my kids. You get into the job market, you have to be the most effective, efficient, and hardworking employee. Even if you're not at the top of the food chain, you have to be the one that the boss says, oh, he can't, because he'll do everything. I mean, he's a little bit, I mean, he works like crazy. You have to be that person, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Invest in yourself and make yourself indispensable to somebody else, whether it's a customer or to somebody that you're working for. It's a huge competitive differentiation that's only going to get more important.
I would love to have you on maybe early next week. I just had one of my producers put some stats together on inflation. And what that actually means to people. I mean, when Biden got in, a hamburger, average hamburger was $4.40. Today, that average burger is $6.01. And if we look at what they say things are going to be, you know, with the, what are they saying, 7.9% inflation, that number is going to be $7 for a burger by the time the next election. But I don't think those stats are right. I think if you want to compare apples to apples, look at how we measured it back in the 1970s and 80s when we hit it before. That would mean that that hamburger would go from $4.40 to almost $8 by the time we hit a presidential election. I just want to talk to you about inflation and how to beat that.
Plenty to talk about. Would love to.
Thank you very much, Carol. Appreciate it. Carol Roth, the name of the book is War on Small Business. Make sure you pick it up. All right. Do I need to say much about Goldline here? Really? I mean, did you hear what she just said? And I know there's a lot of people that, you know, or I don't know what's going to happen. I don't think anybody knows. I mean, I think you heard that. This is unprecedented. There's no model for this. But when the world goes insane, the world usually goes back to gold. So please find out now if this is right before gold takes off even more. China is buying tons of gold. Russia has been buying tons of gold. They know what's coming. Why would billionaires are buying gold? What do they know that you don't know? Find out. This week only, with every graded $5 Gold Indian purchased, you're going to receive one of the unique silver Mind Your Business bars at no cost. Call Goldline at 866-GOLDLINE to find out what kind of gold I buy, why I buy it that way. See if it's right for your family. It's right for mine. May not be. Find what's right for your family. If you're already a client of Goldline, there's additional bonuses this week. Just call them and find out. It's 866-GOLDLINE, 866-GOLDLINE, or Goldline.